The Divine Word by Gav Thorpe. Narrated by Ian Brooker. The word of the Emperor must be read and heard with diligence, so that you may arrive to the knowledge that is needful for you. From the Lectio Divinitatis. The sky above the city flashed and cracked with arcs of lightning, starkly silhouetting the army retreating from the shattered outskirts. Thousands of men and women pulled back from Milvian, bloodied and despondent. The burned shells of tanks and transports were left in their wake, as the soldiers of the Therian cohort responded swiftly and gratefully to the retreat order. Shellfire and las blasts followed them, further thinning their numbers, until covering barrages from hundreds of emplaced guns fell upon Milvian, stalling any pursuit. In the growing gloom of twilight, the Therians streamed towards their waiting comrades. The display view faded to static as the recon link was cut by the observation officers accompanying the assault. Marcus was relieved that he did not have to look at the downcast columns trudging back to the Imperial lines. The view was replaced by a strategic schematic of lines and symbols and target designations that cast a clinical veneer over the whole depressing affair. It was not the first setback that Marcus Valerius had faced in his military career, but he wondered if it would be the last. The Therian Vice Caesary pulled his attention away from the main screen of the command deck and returned his gaze to the small communications monitor in the panel beside him.
The batteries at Milvian must be silenced by midday at the latest. There can be no further delays. Our success depends upon it.
Looking at the stern face of Commander Bran in the monitor display, Marcus knew that the Raven Guard captain was not employing hyperbole. If Bran said the campaign hinged on his army seizing Milvian in the next 18 hours, then he could be sure that it was the truth. Though Bran kept his tone even, free from accusation, Marcus was well aware that he deserved far harsher treatment. The initial attack on Milvian had stalled early on, and the Therian cohort had been forced back in some disarray. But it was a setback that the Vice Caesary was determined to rectify.
"Everything is being prepared for a fresh assault at dawn," Marcus assured the Raven Guard commander.
He had rushed the initial attack, perhaps out of overconfidence or simply eagerness. More than 1,700 Therians had paid for the mistake with their lives.
"I have determined a new attack approach that should see us break through to the batteries this time. We will engage with full force and nothing less. Your ships will be clear for low orbital attack."
"We are poised to strike a deadly blow," Bran continued,
labouring a point that he had made several times before. Marcus accepted the reminder in silence, head bowed.
"Your advance on the second capital, Milvian, has sent much of the traitor's high command fleeing to a bunker complex 30 kilometres south of the city. They will not remain there for long. The Raven Guard will fall upon the renegade commanders with gunship and drop pod in 18 hours' time, providing that the Therians and their auxiliaries can take Milvian and silence the defence lasers and other anti-orbital weapons guarding the city's surrounds."
Bran did not need to reiterate what was at stake. With the taking of Milvian and the elimination of the traitor command, the world of Uesa would be returned to the Imperial fold, and with it, control of the Vandragon sector. There was nothing Marcus could say that would not sound like excuses or argument to the Legiones Astartes officer.
"Yes, Commander, the Milvian batteries will fall."
"Confirmed. Is there anything else?"
There was. But Marcus kept his thoughts to himself. There was the dream. But the bustling command centre was no place to discuss a private matter between Valerius and Bran.
Nothing, Commander.
That is reassuring, Vice Caesare. Fight well.
The display shimmered and then disappeared. Marcus issued a few orders for forces to move forwards and cover the retreat. Assured that all was being done that could be done, the weary Vice Caesare left the command deck and returned to his chambers. A gentle cough attracted his attention, and he stopped to look at Palon, who was waiting expectantly by the closed curtains across the window. The youth was maturing into a slender but muscled young man, and bore his rank of sub-tribune with pride. It was hard to reconcile the determined figure accompanying Marcus with the easily startled boy who had been assigned as his manservant 10 years before.
"Yes, Palon," said Marcus.
"Shall I let in some light, Vice Caesare?"
Valerius waved a hand in ambivalent reply, dismissing the distraction, as he started pacing, exhausted in body, but his mind whirling with the implications of the defeat. Palon took this as permission and drew on the cord that pulled back the heavy drapes. The last rays of bluish sunlight streamed in through a trio of arched windows, revealing wooded hills and slate-grey clouds. Marcus stopped, taken aback by the view. He had been so occupied with the attack that he had not looked out at the landscape of Uesa for several days. He strode to the window and watched as a tree-crowned hill slid past. Of course, the hill was not moving. The relative motion came from the massive Capital Imperialis transport that served as Marcus's headquarters. 80 meters long and 50 high, the contemptuous trundled relentlessly forwards at no more than a brisk walking pace. Carried on long tracks, its slab sides dotted with viewports and weapon sponsons. 5 kilometres away was another lumbering Imperialis, the Iron General, commanded by Praefector Antonius, Marcus's younger brother. Each of the super heavy war engines carried 2 companies of the Therian cohort, 100 men and accompanying battle tanks, while a host of Mechanicum tech priests, adepts and servitors tended the massive behemoth cannon and hundreds of secondary weapons. Around the transports, the rest of the Therians advanced, on foot and in troop carriers, 700,000 men in all. Amongst them strode the scout and battle titans of the Legio Vindictus, supported by several thousand mechanically augmented Scitarii, Sagittarii, Praetorians and Heracli, along with dozens more strange war engines and service vehicles. There were other super-heavy vehicles in the army, Baneblades and Shadow Swords, Storm Hammers and Leviathans of the Capricorn 13th Suppression Regiment, alongside hundreds of Lehman Russ tanks, Chimera transports, Hydra anti-aircraft cannons, and many other tanks and war engines. With them came Griffins and siege bombards, Basilisk assault guns, and mobile missile platforms. In the 2.5 years since the new Therian cohort had been blooded at the perfect fortress of the Emperor's children, Marcus's army had grown strong indeed. The route of the advance was being paved, in some places literally, by the Lothar Pioneer Corps. 15,000 men and as many engineering vehicles cut a swathe through the woods, levelling hills and cutting ramps down the cliffs and escarpments to ease the passage of the host that followed them. Rivers were dammed or bridged by cunningly designed machines. Swamps had been drained and roadways laid for hundreds of kilometres on end across the plains and low-lying foothills. The only part of the force not represented were the Raven Guard themselves. The Legion of Lord Korax was dispersed across Uesa and in orbit. but it had been the Raven Guard that had heralded the arrival of the Emperor's forces, and the Raven Guard that had seized the spaceport at Carlingia to allow the Therians and their allies to land their immense war machines.
"The Command Council is in 2 hours," said Valerius, turning away from the military spectacle.
He crossed to the cot made up in one corner of the chamber, the constant rumble of the massive transport's engines no longer a distraction.
"Wake me in 1 hour."
He shrugged off his heavy coat into Palon's waiting hands. As he sat on the edge of the bed, and Palon knelt to remove his boots, the Vice Caesarean noticed that his attendant was unusually pensive.
"Something is on your mind. Speak it."
The attendant hesitated, concentrating on his task. He did not meet his master's gaze as he spoke.
"You did not mention your dreams to Commander Bran this time, I assume."
"I did not," Valerius replied.
With his boots removed, he swung his legs onto the bed and laid back, hands clasped across his chest.
"He made it clear, after the debacle with the raptors, that I was not to speak of them again."
"The last such dream saved the Raven Guard from annihilation, Vice Caesare. Do you not think this latest experience might be pertinent to the campaign?"
"I am fortunate that Lord Korax has appeared to have dispensed with any curiosity over our timely arrival at Isfahan, and Bran would have it remain so. It is clear to me that the Primarch did not send me the visions, and I am not about to raise issues that could lead to uncomfortable questions. We have seen some strange things in this war already. An Imperial Army commander who has dream visions would not be tolerated."
"But what if the dreams were sent by another, higher power than the Primarch?"
There was slight admonition in Palon's tone.
"Nonsense," said Valerius, sitting up. He looked at his attendant. "There are no higher powers."
"I can think of one,"
Palon suggested quietly.
The valet delved into a pocket of his tunic and brought forth a sheaf of tattered papers and plasprints.
He became more animated.
"I was given these by one of the Lothorians in respect of an entirely different concern. There is truth in these writings, deeper than anything I have read before. The Emperor has not abandoned us, but continues to watch and guide his followers. It is all in here."
He proffered the bundle of sheets to Valerius, but the Vice Caesare waved them away with a contemptuous snort.
"I expected better of you, Palon. I thought you had been raised a Therian and taught the wisdom of logic and reason. Now you seek to peddle these superstitions as a deeper truth. Do you not think I have heard these prattling of the divine before? It is an affront to the imperial truth and everything we have fought for."
"Apologies, Vice Caesare. I did not mean to offend," said Palon, hastily stuffing the text back into his pocket.
"Wake me in 1 hour, and we'll say no more about God emperors and divine guidance."
Sleep had not come easily to Valerius for several days, and today was no different. As soon as he started to slumber, his thoughts were assailed by a frightening tableau. The Vice Caesare stood upon a grassy plain, with storm clouds gathering overhead. Around him, the grass parted and rustled as something slithered close by.
Serpents rose up, their slick green scales shining, the beasts bearing fangs as long as daggers. Valerius was surrounded, unable to flee as the snakes closed in on him, sinking their teeth into his legs and arms, burying fangs into his chest and gut. As he writhed in torment, Marcus saw a greater body heaving into view and realized that the creatures attacking him were but the multitudinous heads of a single monster.
The Hydra beast of ancient Terran myth subdued him with its venom and looped its coils about him as it withdrew its fangs, squeezing the life from him. Marcus woke, with sweat dampening his brow. Through the windows he saw that the sky had darkened further. Palon sat on a stool by the dresser, hastily pushing something back into his pocket as he turned at his master's wakening. There was concern in the attendant's eyes, and something that Valerius had not noticed before. Wonder. Whatever nonsense was written in those scraps of text had clearly had a profound impact upon the young man, but Valerius no longer had the energy to berate him. The vice-caesar dragged himself upright, his shirt and breeches moist with perspiration. Palon crossed to the curtain wardrobe and pulled out a freshly pressed uniform. Valerius wordlessly nodded his thanks. Situated behind the bridge of the Capitol Imperialis, the command chamber was a broad room 20 meters by 30, dominated by the glowing hololith display at its centre. A line of communications panels manned by servitors and adjutants lit one wall, while the opposite bulkhead was filled with a live-feed visual display from the transport scanners and the strategic network. The hololith was centred on Milvian, a sprawling city that had burst past its curtain wall decades ago, creating a mishmash suburb of manufactories and habitation tenements encircling the perimeter defence towers and main garrison buildings. Large palaces of the planetary elite dominated the hill that rose inside the walls at the western edge, protected by four keeps overlooking the tilt bridge that spanned the river bisecting the city. Overflights by recon craft and orbital surveys had confirmed that all of the other crossings had been destroyed by the defenders. Counter-battery fire from macro cannons and wall emplacements was falling only a few kilometres away, so that the command council was conducted to a backdrop of continual shelling against the earthworks and trench lines thrown up over the last days by the pioneers and their engines. As Valerius spoke, sub-tribunes manipulated the display on the hololith, assigning formations and manoeuvres with blinking arrows and icons. "The plan has not changed," the vice-caesary told his command council. "The taking of the city comprises four phases. The first has been already completed. The establishment of a siege line, 2 kilometres from the outskirts of the suburbs. Colonel Golardi's guns and rockets of the Capricorn 13th have pounded the inner defensive line. The curtain of fire laid down has held the main force of the traitors inside the central city, leaving the outskirts vulnerable. Led by their prefectors, the men of the Therian cohort will seize the outer city, ready for an assault on the walls, clearing the streets for the tanks and titans that would form a spearhead for the main attack." Valerius paused as a flashing blue dome appeared on the hololith. "All was well, we thought, but the early attack met something we had not encountered before. A force screen shields the approaches to the city wall, capable of turning aside shells and lasers, ripping into living flesh with great sprays of energy. The men call it the lightning field, and it stopped them in their tracks. The lightning field is the greatest obstacle, but once it falls..." Marcus was confident that it would fall, once they located the generators and disabled them. "The inner city districts on either side of the river form the final two objectives. The orbital defence weapons inside the hill keep will be silenced, and the Raven Guard can launch their drop attack on the fortifications beyond the city." "Orbital support?" The question was asked by General Cahill of the Pioneers, a short, wiry man in his later years dressed in nondescript camouflage fatigues. "Not until we silence the defences," replied Marcus.
We cannot risk any ships in low orbit, and any other strikes will be too inaccurate. We need precision strikes to remove the lightning field. Once we have taken out the energy screen, we will have air support. But the objective is to take the city, not level it. The Viceroy waited to see if there were any other questions from the assembled officers. At the back of his mind, he could still feel the hot breath of the Hydra upon his skin and the sting of its fangs piercing his flesh. He tried to ignore the sensation, but the latest dream had been more vivid than before, leaving him in a state of deep unease. He reviewed the hollow schematic once more, seeking any area of vulnerability. His gaze settled upon the small town of Lavlin, 4 kilometres to the west, along the main axis of advance. It had been hit heavily by the Capricorn 13th and an orbital attack in the previous days, and a sweep by the pioneers had confirmed that it was clear of enemies. And yet, now, Marcus's eye was drawn to it once again. "We are sure that the flank at Lavlin is secure?" he asked Cahill. "No enemy troops there 12 hours ago," the general said with a shrug. "We could perform another reconnaissance sweep into the ruins, but that would take time. I cannot spare men from the main attack." Valerius considered his options, stroking his freshly shaven chin. For all that the plan seemed to be secure, as secure as any plan could be, he could not rid himself of the doubts caused by his nightmare and the retreat earlier that day. Again and again his eyes flickered back to Lavlin. "I will detail 10 companies to act as a reserve, in case a flank is threatened." He turned his attention to one of the screens, showing the face of Princeps Seniorius Neardanzel of the Legio Vindictus, who had joined the council from the bridge of his warlord Titan. "Please assign 2 engines to the reserve, Princeps."
"It seems a waste of resource," the commander replied brusquely, brow furrowing. 10 companies and 2 Titans might be sorely missed during the main assault."
"We can breach the lightning field without them," Valerius countered. "They can move forwards and support the main attack once the flank is secure." "Do you have some intelligence that we have not seen, Vice Caesare?" asked Colonel Gulardi of the Capricorns. "Why the sudden doubt over Lavlin?"
"No intelligence," Marcus said quickly. He took a moment, calming himself.
"It is imperative that we advance on the city unmolested. That is all. Better to be sure now than regretful later."
"Perhaps you are being overly cautious," suggested Gulardi. "Casualties are an inevitable consequence of war."
Valerius bit back his first reply, reminded that the Capricorns were not in the assault force, but safe behind siege lines located kilometres from the city. Instead, he grunted and shrugged.
"Cautious, yes, but not overly so, Colonel," he said evenly, keeping his temper in check. Gulardi did not know what Marcus felt deep inside and could not be blamed for his doubts.
"Who is to command the reserve?" asked Antonius.
Dressed in the colourful uniform of the Therians, complete with the red sash of office across his breastplate, the Prefector reminded Marcus of himself a few years ago, when he had been bringing planets to compliance. More than 2 years of war against the traitors had not marred Antonius's optimism. Marcus envied his younger brother's hopefulness, but after seeing what had happened at Istvan and experiencing the treachery of War Master Horus firsthand, Marcus had given up any thought of ultimate victory and simply accepted each battle as it came.
"You will," Marcus replied.
There was nobody he trusted more, and the presence of the Iron General was not essential to the main assault. "I will send details of the detachment. 6 infantry companies, 4 armoured, before you take your shuttle back." Antonius accepted the responsibility with a nod and a curious look in his eye. At first, Marcus thought that he saw suspicion in the expressions of the others, but realised it was his paranoia. The other officers were dubious of the sudden change of plan, but nothing more.
"Any other considerations we have not covered?" he asked, changing the subject. The assembled council offered no further comments or questions in the brief pause.
"Good. Golardi's bombardment commences in 30 minutes. We attack in 45.
The breach of the Contemptuous buzzed with Comnet feeds and Vox chatter being monitored by Valerius's subordinates. Every minute or so the main cannon fired, causing the Capital Imperialis to shudder, the deafening boom barely muffled by audio dampeners. Marcus concentrated on the main display, which had been divided into 7 subscreens, showing the battle telemetry across the 5 kilometres long front. One display was hooked into the live feed from the reconnaissance craft in the upper atmosphere above the city, showing the pulverised defences. The fire of the Capricorns continued to rain down, shells and missiles concentrated on the pillboxes and weapons batteries. 5 more displays were schematics of the Pioneer and Therian advance into the outskirts of Milvian. Infantry brigades moved swiftly from building to building, covered by Vindicta's Warhound Titans. Progress was swift, and it seemed as though the bulk of the enemy had been withdrawn to the wall as Marcus had expected. Even so, the attack was methodical and thorough, leaving nothing to fortune. 1 kilometre behind the infantry came the tanks and assault guns of Therian and Capricorn. In long columns they crawled forwards along the main boulevards and avenues, accompanied by more infantry to ensure that they were not ambushed. The remaining screen was a serialised picked feed around the headquarters transport, the vista of smoke-shrouded streets slightly blurred by the 6 banks of void shields protecting the massive command vehicle. Flickers of las fire, blossoms of explosions and columns of smoke painted the scene. The blur of artillery shells sped across the cloudy sky, and plumes of dust from collapsing buildings billowed along the streets. From across the comm, a constant background wash of innumerable reports and conversations, and the chatter of small arms fire was punctuated by louder detonations. Men and women exchanged terse reports, swore and cursed, reeled off target grids, and barked orders to their subordinates. It felt quite distant, almost a step removed from Marcus, as he listened and watched. He would catch a snippet of a sergeant berating his squad for falling back, and then the sonorous chant of a mechanicum servitor churning out scan vectors, broken by the crackle of static and the hiss of cipher dampening. There were shouts, cries of pain, and on the screens tiny symbols would flash or disappear as the battle ebbed and flowed. Minuscule markings wormed their way along back alleys and were balked at enemy-held junctions. Arrows of projected advances, triangles of tertiary objectives seized, and circles denoting cannon fire zones covered the screens in a seemingly random pattern. Marcus did not try to comprehend it all. Less than a tenth of what was going on filtered into his conscious thoughts. Now and then he would ask for clarification from one of his tribunes, but it was not his part to manage every detail of the conflict. His eye was on the broad sweep, and in this regard all was progressing as he had hoped. Now and then his attention was drawn to the last subscreen, over which scrolled the casualty listing of the 18 Therian cohort phalanxes. 2,030 men had fallen in the first attack, not all of them dead, but the rate of loss had slowed as the army progressed past the outer line of defenders. 4 kilometres behind and 3 kilometres to the west, on the right flank of the advance, the Iron General and attending companies waited for the command to attack. The assault had begun an hour ago, and there was no sign of threat from Lavlin, but Marcus was not yet ready to shake off his misgivings and commit the reserve. The Contemptuous supported the main attack, ploughing along the main thoroughfare of Milvian, towards the outer limits of the lightning field. The defensive screen had not been tested against the void shields of a Titan or Capital Imperialis, and Valerius had determined the super-heavy mobile fortress was the best means of destroying one of the generators. Once a breach was made in the field's coverage, other forces would target the rest. There was more to Valerius leading the attack than simple pragmatism. After the repulse of his earlier assault, he wanted to prove to his men, and more importantly to Lord Korax, that he and his Therians could still be relied upon. When they had been founded, they had served the Emperor himself, and the Primarch of the Raven Guard deserved no less. The contemptuous ground forwards, pulverizing deserted ground cars and abandoned tanks that lay in the fortress's path. The batteries on both flanks were unleashing their fire into the surrounding city blocks, the main cannon levelling structures even a few hundred metres distant. The shells of the defenders detonated around the advancing behemoth. Now and then a direct hit would shimmer across the void shields, engulfing the contemptuous in a blazing aura of purple and gold. In the wake of the gargantuan engine, Therian tanks and infantry waited to pour forwards to exploit any breakthrough. Valerius knew that the battle was at its hinge point, with success or failure of the entire invasion in the balance of the next hour. Though the advance through the outer city had been swift, the traitors had been wise to marshal their resources inside the lightning field, and the attack had almost ground to a standstill. There were numerous requests from Valerius's subordinates to commit the reserve. The added firepower of the Titans and companies were in demand all across the front. "Generate a site within range, Vice Caesare," reported one of the tribunes. "Target main weapon systems. Fire for full effect." As the order left Marcus's lips, another tribune blurted out a warning from his position at the sensor panels. "Enemy Warlord Titan, 800 metres, Sector 4, targeting us!" A subscreen blurred and brought up an image of the traitor war engine, its outline hazy beyond its void shields. "Shall we redirect fire?" "Negative," snapped Marcus. "Concentrate all weapons on the field generator. Our void shields can weather the enemy attack. Our Titans will respond." The contemptuous shook as it unleashed a full barrage from its cannons and heavy weapons. Half a kilometre ahead, the generator complex exploded into a microstorm as the lightning field detonated, sending rockcrete and gobbets of molten metal hundreds of metres into the air amongst arcing shafts of energy. A triumphant shout across the command deck was silenced by a call from the sensorium tribute. "Warp missile, Vice Caesare!" The subscreen zoomed in on one of the traitor Titan's carapace weapon hardpoints. A missile 10 meters long launched in a plume of blue fire. It covered the first 100 meters in seconds before its miniature warp engine activated. The missile disappeared for a moment, leaving nothing more than a contrail of wavering white and green warp energy. A second later, it reappeared, less than 200 metres from the contemptuous. "Brace for impact!" roared Valerius, as the incoming ordnance skipped into the warp again. The Vice Caesare grabbed hold of the command console as the warp missile appeared inside the Capital Imperialis' void shields and detonated. Valerius was flung to the deck as the contemptuous rocked on its tracks, teetering for a long moment before crashing back onto the road. Warning sirens blared, deafening Valerius, as he pushed himself to his feet. Blood streamed down his face from a cut on his brow. He wiped it away with the frocked sleeve of his shirt. "Damage control! Return fire! Vice Caesare! We have confirmation the lightning field is down," reported one of the tribunes. "Shall we commit the reserves?" Marcus was on the verge of issuing the order, knowing that any significant delay risked the enemy recovering from the lightning field's failure, delaying the assault on the anti-orbital guns. His men and their allies were dying in the hundreds to push on, but their deaths would be for nothing if the batteries on the far side were not secured. He was about to contact Antonius when his personal link chimed. To Marcus's surprise, it was his brother. "Vice Caesare, we are detecting movement through the ruins of Lavlin, infantry companies.
They are broadcasting Raven Guard Legion authorization identifiers and are requesting passage through the line.
Valerius could barely concentrate amongst the blaring of the klaxons, the barked reports of his tribunes, and the throbbing from the wound on his face.
Are you sure? I've had no report from the Primarch or his commanders that the Legion is operating in this area.
Comm checks and sensor sweeps confirm a sizable force of infantry and vehicles moving on our position. Perhaps there has been a change of plan.
Marcus was taken aback by the news.
While it was possible that a contingent of Raven Guard had sent additional forces to join the battle, several of the Legion's companies were spread across the planet, fighting independently, as was Korax's usual strategy. It stretched credulity to think that he would not be informed of their presence on his battlefront.
You are sure they are transmitting the appropriate call signs and ID codes?
They are Raven Guard signals, Vice Caesare. A few days old, but they clear our protocol servitors.
The vision of the many-headed serpent fluttered through Marcus's thoughts, and his gut writhed. Old call signs. It was more than coincidence. It had to be.
The signals are false, Antonius. Open fire!
Brother, you want us to fire on forces sent by the Raven Guard to aid us? Have you gone mad?
Marcus considered the accusation for a moment and drew no conclusion one way or the other. Perhaps he was mad, but perhaps not. If the arriving force were enemies, then they would have a clear attack into the rear of the Therians. The whole army would have to be pulled back to counter them. Though Marcus was not sure of his sanity, his instincts were screaming at him to be aware of deception. The Primarch himself had given strict orders concerning communication security since the crisis at Ravendelve. Marcus was well within his authority.
Open fire on approaching forces. Traitors have breached our protocols. This is an enemy attack. Marcus, open fire, or I will have you removed from command.
The comm went silent. Marcus waited nervously, fidgeting with the red sash across his chest. Yet there was no doubt in his mind that he had done the right thing. He watched as the enemy Titan's void shields flared and failed under the pounding of the main cannon and converging fire from friendly warlords arriving from all directions. Nearly 3 minutes trickled past, during which Marcus was expecting to receive an irate communication from Bran, or perhaps even from Lord Korax himself. He wiped the sweat from his face with a cuff of his jacket and stared at the screens, forcing himself to observe the ongoing battle.
Vice Caesare, reports of fighting on the western flank!
One of the tribunes delivered the message breathlessly, face reddened with shock.
Prefector Antonius has engaged an enemy force of Imperial Army renegades on the outskirts of Lavlin. Reserve phalanx and titans are moving forwards to engage.
Marcus forced himself to remain calm. He let out a long breath and spoke in a measured tone.
I understand. Send word to all commanders. Focus on the assault. The threat is being dealt with. Any confirmation on the identity of the enemy?
Nothing confirmed, Vice Caesare. But initial visual reports indicate Imperial Army warriors with defaced insignia. Rebels!
Marcus nodded, the news unsurprising. There were bound to be pockets of enemy resistance everywhere.
Send word to Legion Command. Inform them that security protocols have been compromised. Recommend immediate evaluation of all forces and plans.
The comlink beeped again in his ear.
By the Emperor, brother, that was fortunate! Exclaimed Antonius. I was going to let them walk straight into range and attack us.
Fortune had nothing to do with it, brother,
Marcus replied before he could stop himself.
You knew? Why did you not tell us you suspected a traitor attack?
What could Marcus say? None save for Palon knew about the dream, and Marcus was not about to broadcast such confidences to the entire army.
Simply prudence, brother. Nothing more.
Do you need additional forces?
No, Vice Caesary. The Titans and tanks are pushing them back already. Prudence be praised, eh?
Something like that.
Weary but victorious, Marcus flopped onto his bed. It was past midnight, and there were still forces fighting in the city, but he could leave the mopping up to the others. He had received word from Bran that the drop assault upon the enemy bunker complex had been a complete success. 4,000 enemy had been killed, and a number of traitor commanders had been captured. Amongst the enemy leaders had been spotted a lone legionnaire from the Alpha Legion, who had doubtlessly been coordinating the defence. But the traitor had killed himself rather than be captured. Bran had been earnest in his praise of Marcus and the efforts of his army. The commander had, thankfully, made no mention of Marcus's timely interception of the Alpha Legion orchestrated attack.
Do you wish to undress, Vice Caesary?
Marcus had not noticed Palon, who had been waiting patiently for his master's return. The attendant stood by the bed, and Marcus sat up and shrugged off his coat.
A moment, Palon, he said as the manservant turned towards the wardrobe.
Master?
Those scribblings you had, what did you do with them?
I still have them, Vice Caesary.
Palon looked crestfallen.
I'm sorry. Did you wish me to dispose of them?
No. Not yet, Marcus said quietly.
He thought of the day's events and knew that he had to find hope from somewhere. He could not continue simply fighting each battle as it came. The emptiness inside would consume him, even if the enemy did not kill him. The lightning field, the warp missile, and most of all the enemy counter-attack, all preyed on his thoughts.
Let me see them.
Palon delved into his pocket and fished out the sheaf of texts, passing them to his master after a moment's pause. Fingers tugging at an earlobe, the Vice Caesary began to read under his breath.
Love the Emperor, for he is the salvation of mankind. Obey his words, for he will lead you into the light of the future. Heed his wisdom, for he will protect you from evil. Whisper his prayers with devotion, for they will save your soul. Honour his servants, for they speak in his voice. Tremble before his majesty, for we all walk in his immortal shadow.
That was The Divine Word by Gav Thorpe, narrated by Ian Brooker. This recording is copyrighted by Games Workshop 2015.